We are like the three prototypes from someone who, from Australia, who's taking all the American acting jobs.
I didn't realize. And mine was kind of toned down tonight, but I should have, like, fucking Mac Jones, fucking Sox kid.
I don't know why I thought this was true, but the first time I met Luke, because we had never spoken before we met in person, I don't know why I just figured the edges were mostly sanded off, and he just sounded so fucking Boston to me. I was like, there's no way this is happening. And then Ron, when he first got on, I describe him as being an extra in True Detective Season 1.
Yeah, well, you definitely don't have any sort of characteristic accent.
Right, I wasn't excluding myself. People say I sound like Chuck
Not at all.
Like, I know where I am.
You're mid-Atlantic neutral. Oh, yeah.
All right, so I don't know if you've listened to the prior episodes. There's no obligation that my friends listen to my project, even though I am a subscriber to Hell World paid. But if you have or have not listened, we don't.
Why am I going to listen to a podcast about the New Orleans Saints? I let you know I love you. But...
Oh, like I care about the depressing world.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. So we don't have theme music because we're cheap and smart. And so what we do instead of theme music is we just do mouth horns for when the Saints come marching in, and you're free to...
I bet you do.
Yeah. We just do that, and so you're free to... It's public domain. I'll just count it off, and then feel free to join us if you would like. 3, 2, 1. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 6 of City Saint and Country Saint. This is after week 5, 34-0 demolition of the Patriots. With me as always, my friend from down south, El Ron Mexico. Ron, how are you doing this week?
I'm good. I forgot what this feeling felt like. It's been a while since we had a W.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
It was a couple of bad weeks. Don't worry, though. Yeah. Someone's miserable. With us is the writer of the incredible Hell World newsletter and books connected thereto. Everyone, please welcome this week's guest, Boston's own Luke O'Neill. Luke, how are you?
I'm miserable.
Now, I know you well enough to know that that's already your normal state. So how is that? How does that compare to this?
Well, I would have been miserable anyways, but I mean, we were texting, you know, the other day when the game was on, and I said, I'm not even mad, I just think it's funny. And, you know, And like I said, I do actually mean that because, like, you know, no one's going to give me any sort of sympathy as a Patriots fan or a Boston fan, a sports fan for, you know, watching a terrible team, you know. I've got about 20 years before I can, you know, get any sort of sympathy.
Right. You're the only person in New England who understands that.
Right. But like the past few years, you know, the post-Brady years, past three years and change or whatever, I've still been watching every game, getting fucking pissed off out of my ass because they aren't as good as they were when Brady was there, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the thing about being a sports fan. Every season you're like, oh, well, maybe we're going to be all right this year, you know? And, but, you know, I get, like any stupid sports fan, I get really emotionally invested. I get fucking pissed off. Oh, and I used to get fucking pissed off even in the Brady years, you know, like even in like 2007, if they didn't win by like 50 points, I was getting pissed off, you know. So, but I don't want to be pissed off, you know. Like, I think when I say this, I do really mean it sincerely. Like, obviously I would have preferred them to be competitive in the mix for the playoffs this year, but if I have a choice between having it, you know, having to watch every week and maybe them going 8-9 or something, or me being able just to check out and not be pissed off anymore, like I'll take that, you know. Now I don't have to care. It's not like now I don't have to care anymore, you know.
Yeah, that's not how I treat it. I mean, I do have. We did the Saints obviously didn't have the same success that the Patriots did over the Brady years, but the Breeze years were good to us. We did get our one title. We got a lot of near misses that we get to be really high and mighty about because we got fucked. Or we either got fucked in unjust ways, or we were like laughed at by the universe, like the Diggs touchdown in epic ways that are just defied.
And the Vernon Davis one.
Like actual explanation. And now that we have like this stretch where we don't know where it's going to go, I have chosen the path of anger. Like, I would rather be really pissed off when they're bad. How about you, Ron?
I'd love to be angry about it. Yeah. It's very cathartic to, like, throw all of that anger into it. And you know what I don't like is, like, Carr, he gave a, he's 2-2. He's given like, an interview before the game or something. And he's like, we're 2-2. It's fine with me. I went 0-10 one year. And I was like, why bring that energy here? Like, why are you okay with going 2-2? Like, this is the Saints, man. You know, don't go, and I think.
Leave those loser particles in Vegas.
Yes.
That's not good. I don't want to hear that. I'm going to have to break his other shoulder. Not that I could. I mean, if I got within 10 yards of him, he'd give me a hard stare and I'd shit myself. But.
Over the years, I had a couple of chances to interview, you know, different NFL athletes and stuff when I was writing for newspapers and magazines and stuff. And just standing next to any one of those dudes, no matter who it is, you're like, oh, my God, this dude could break me in half right now if he wanted to.
Yeah.
Like, I remember one time, interviewing Logan Mankins.
Oh, my God. He was an offensive lineman, right?
Yeah. And I was just standing there. And, you know, like, I'm not necessarily a small dude. I mean, in the NFL terms, I am a small dude. But, like, just standing there, it's like the gravity of a moon type of scenario.
The one time I was in New Orleans for a Saints game, just via Priceline, I ended up in the same hotel as the Arizona Cardinals. And... Mm. I rode an elevator with Matt Leinart, who is, like, at the time, right, he's in playing shape. I mean, he didn't play much, he's 6'4", 230, just, like, looming over and, like, the comically handsome way where you want him to be hit by a bus. Mm-hmm. Right? You can't be this big and pretty. It's no fair at all. And then the elevator opened on a different elevator ride on Edgerrin James, who is late in his career, who is like shorter than me, but carved out of granite and 6 inches wider than me in each direction because he's just like so solid. And I was just like, these people are just not human. They're a better species than we are.
No, so we're doing that now.
Yeah, no, their Magneto is going to protect their rights. They're all better than us.
I remember there was a time when I used to think like, well, maybe, you know, some punters or kickers, maybe I could, you know, square up against one of them. But no, even the punters and the kickers would rip the average guy in half. Yeah, you know?
Especially now. Like, they're kickers are actually now, like, all huge. Like, I think they maybe used to be soccer guys where you're like, maybe they're human-sized. But now they're just, like, being processed out of these, like, Australian punting factories where they used to play contact sports that involved kicking.
Right.
I think we might have the smallest kicker left.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, our kicker's tiny.
Oh, right, that dude, your kicker... He's like a really small dude, if I recall from...
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like under 160 pounds. He's like about 160. He's like 5'8 or 5'9, 160.
Yeah.
Wow. On the other hand, he must be like all coiled muscle, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, he certainly did better than our kicker. I didn't even, this new dude we have as a kicker, I don't even bother to learn his name. He's not long for the team or the league. But, you know, old Billy Belichick did spend a fourth round pick on him.
Oh, so really? So you may have him for a couple of years. Damn. Though he's not shy about dumping his own draft picks.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how much you guys have paid attention to, probably not, what's the talk in Boston the past couple of weeks, but there actually is like a groundswell for getting fucking Belichick out of here.
That's insane. What?
Yeah.
Damn.
That is the shortest leash ever. That's really funny. Well,
yeah. I don't know. I think the number was the past two games outscored, or three, was 69-3 or something like that.
Yeah.
And while it's very funny, and Gronkowski would love that stat, I don't think it's very funny. I know, but people are pissed off. Like, and you would think that. Sorry, I call him Belichick just because it's funny. I don't think he actually cheated. I think the Patriots earned all of their titles, and if you say otherwise, I'll get pissed off. But it is kind of a fun nickname.
Yeah.
It just kind of rolls off the tongue. But no, but I'm sick of this dude's shit, man. Like, you know, you guys probably don't watch the press conferences.
Stuff circulates.
Mm-hmm.
He's just such a fucking prick. It's insane. And like, and it's like, okay, dude, you can be a prick to the, you can treat the reporters, the beat reporters, like vermin when you're going, you know, 12-4 every year for like 15 years, you know, then that's fine. You can kind of, I mean, not that it's fine, but you know, you give it, you kind of understand it. But when you're going to miss the playoffs for the third time in 4 years and you're just like acting like a fucking dickhead to these people just doing their jobs, these reporters, it's like, you know, it really pisses me off.
Yeah.
And I'm very ashamed to say that I listen to Sports Talk Radio a lot here, where I listen to.
I don't drive as much as I used to, but I did listen to a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Even if I go to the store, I don't drive very long distances, but, you know, if I go to the store, I put it on, or maybe sometimes listen to the podcasts on my phone when I'm at the gym, like a loser.
Uh-huh. Yeah, random podcasts, other people's podcasts. I get it. Go on.
Yeah, well, not yours.
Yeah.
Specifically, I do not listen to your Saints podcast, just to be clear. I probably won't even listen to this one.
Yeah.
No, I'm just teasing. But people are pissed off is the point.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. I mean, I will say I'm glad that we're not the embarrassing team that gave up the 3 points to you. I mean, yeah. I don't even know if I could show my face if we gave up 3 points to this fucking team.
Yeah.
We almost did, except the kicker I mentioned earlier for the fourth round pick missed his
He was intimidated. That's on us, too. We get credit for that.
He was shook.
Yeah, this counts, by the way, as the Get His Ass segment, where we just unload on you gratuitously.
You guys do, it's probably not really that frequent of a segment, is it?
Well, it's 3 out of 5.
Well, you can go ahead. Give me shit.
I've decided not to do it as a segment. We're just going to keep doing it.
We're not doing it.
No, I did let her go. Okay. Ron, get his ass.
All right, let's hear it. Let's hear the joke.
Hold on. I'm on a lot of allergy medicine. These are bad jokes. Oh, hold on. Okay. All right. What was I thinking when I did? Okay, here, wait up. Mac Jones, more like Mike Jones, because everybody has his number. Okay, that's bad. I don't know if you know who Mike Jones is. Mac Jones, more like Tom Jones, because it's not unusual to love when you're playing against him. All right. Okay. Mac Jones, more like MacGyver, because he can't use the shotgun to save his life. Mac Jones, more like McDonald's, because he got patty steaming while the visitors are feasting. Mac Jones, more like Bob Jones Bible College, because you got to be a fucking rube to give him any money. Mac Jones, more like January Jones, because he got paid off of a mediocre work and been mailing it in ever since. Well, this goes on for a while, Charles. I don't know. I was on a lot of medicine when I did this.
All right, hold on. I'm going to... I'm going to put my foot down on January, talking shit about January Jones. That's my wife.
Okay, right there. All right.
I think I may have to also put my foot down on January Jones, but also I have to report that to Luke's wife. Sorry.
Narc.
Sorry, Michelle. Well,
yeah.
That is how I'm going to get Luke's ass, is I'm going to just send that segment to Michelle.
Yeah. It's fine. Most of the Pats fans didn't even have to see it because they were in jail for January 6th crimes. Sorry, I'm going to stop.
That's good. I don't know. It's okay.
Some of these are all right. Yeah.
I mean, I am... You know, I self-described as the one good Boston sports fan.
Right.
So
right. You can't see it because this is audio only, but he does have a plaque that he was given by David Stern himself.
That's right. I think that they really are a bunch of shitheads around here. You know, we're represented by some of the most annoying guys in the world. You know, Portnoy, Bill Simmons.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, the best thing that is someone in the Saints DM we have, my friend Cassidy Hanahan, I guess, said that this game was so much fun he might have to listen to Bill Simmons
just to hear him cry.
Yeah. All I'm really going to do, I didn't write up a bunch of Mac Jones jokes. I am just going to read this. And you're going to know exactly what it means. 3 punt, 3 interception. 7 missed field goal. 3 punt, 6 punt, 5 punt. 3 fumble. 4 punt, 3 punt. 1 interception. 3 punt, 4 downs. 3 punt, 4 downs. That is the Patriots' 14 drives and the number of plays in each of them and how they ended, which is how you build a shutout.
Yeah, it's not a good time in the Patriots organization.
When was the last time you went to a Patriots game?
The last time I went to a Patriots game was the Super Bowl against Atlanta in Houston.
Oh, that's
the greatest Super Bowl comeback of all time.
Oh.
And that was actually Michelle. That was Michelle's, for my wife, her first football game of all time.
I would never go to another.
Yeah, that's amazing. I was a Pats fan that night.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, it was, you know, literally the greatest super, you know, championship comeback of all time. Yeah,
but also the Falcons are the worst.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't have any animosity towards them. But we went, and you know, it was a great time. You know, I've been to Houston maybe just a couple times, but I actually kind of like it. You know, I think it's a cool city. And we went, but obviously the first half of the game fucking sucked so bad. And I was saying to my wife, like, let's get the fuck out of here. I don't want to watch this anymore. Like, literally, I was dying to leave. And like the worst part of it was like, you can't really get drunk at a football game, you know? And I was trying to, just to like, so I would stop being miserable. But like, the only way you can get booze if it's in like this like 20 ounce thing of like lemonade or whatever. I was trying my best.
Well, let me tell you, I've certainly found plenty of people who figured out a way. They just pregame really hard.
Well, right. But that's not really my thing.
Right,
but,
sure.
But you
can't get depressed because the game makes you want to get drunk, sir.
Yeah, for sure. And she said, you know, no, we can't leave. You know, when are we ever going to be at the Super Bowl again? We had pretty good seats because I was with like Esquire at the time, and I got kind of hooked up, and she, you know, convinced us to stay, and it was the best thing my wife has ever done for me in our entire marriage. You know? Don't send that.
I won't send that clip.
But she can probably hear me.
She has told me that she's a regular listener.
She's just up there. She can hear me. Yes. I'm just joking.
I can't believe you would actually defend yourself in this kangaroo court. that's more damning than anything.
I don't want to ruin my reputation as a wife guy. You know?
Right, so. Fair. Okay.
But yeah, so that was, I mean, that was, I actually don't like, that was the last time I went to a game. I go to a game every, you know, couple of years. I don't like actually going to Gillette Stadium. It's like a pain in the ass to get to, and everyone's an asshole, and you know, have you guys probably never been, but it's like, you know, it's like an hour outside of Boston, and there's just like one small road that gets in there, and it takes you, you know, leaving at the end of the night takes you like 3 hours to get back. And so, you know, I don't really love it. I went to Fenway this year, and that, you know, I maybe go to Fenway once every year. And
really? That's it? Fuck.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. I just don't like, really like the live experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially, I don't know. Well, maybe just because they don't let you rip heaters in the stadiums anymore. So that kind of
right. That would take the edge off.
I just sit there being agitated the whole time. Like, yeah. I gotta get out of here. I gotta. It's sad, but true.
It is true.
I'm surprised. You know what?
I went scared away the actual derelict audience.
No, seriously. Yeah. And you know what? We were down in New Orleans in April. And I had a great fucking time, but I was surprised, like, they don't let you... I was in, like, dive bars in the French Quarter, and it's like, oh, can I smoke in here? They're like, no. I was like, the fuck is this town where you can do everything in the world, but I can't have a cigarette at this open-air bar, you know?
They used to let you not that long ago.
Smoking is good, by the way, or anything.
No, smoking rocks.
Welcome to the Reason Magazine podcast.
No, but I don't get it. Why can I walk down the street with a fucking cocktail but I can't have a cigarette? You know, it's weird. Yeah. It makes no sense. But I did have, we did, it was actually our first time down there. And, you know, we really love you know, old cocktail history and shit like that. Like, you know, the origins of the old cocktails. So we went to a lot of places, you know, like that. And
They got some famous mixologists down there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we went to a bunch.
It's becoming like the Disneyfication of the French Quarter. But the French Quarter's changed a lot, especially since Katrina.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Donna's is gone.
What's that?
Donna's was like my favorite jazz bar. It was a little dive like off of Bourbon Street. Like at the edge of the quarter, like right by Louis Armstrong Park, I think. And I like that place a lot. And that was gone the last time I went, which is disappointing.
Yeah, that's how it goes. You know, it's just, that's how it is in, you know, Boston too. Like, you know, like 10 years ago, I wrote this book about dive bars in Boston. I went to, you know, like 150 of them and like wrote about my, you know, top 90 or something. And maybe out of like the 100 and, you know, something that I wrote about, there's like 20 left in like Boston proper, you know?
Yeah, and yeah, I know you wrote about Great Scott closing. Is that the name of the place?
Yeah, Great Scott was like a great... Yeah, did we go there when you visited?
No, we went to the one I'm forgetting the name of, but it was like Middle Eastern theme.
Oh, Middle East. The Middle East. There's like the rock club, Middle East rock club.
Yeah.
That's like a great classic rock club in Central Square. Yeah, Charles came up to visit. And you know, I was thinking about recently. I think we went to Davis Square in Somerville, and we went. Did we go to like a stand up show? And in my memory,
we did, but in Boston.
I think it was in Somerville.
Oh, well, I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, but the funny part was, I was like, oh well. What will we do show Charles today? We'll go to a stand-up show. And then you were just like, these fucking hacks. They're all hacks. They're all
suck. Not all of them. I thought they were, but most.
I know. I'm just busting. I'm teasing. Yeah. I'm teasing.
I'm a terrible stand-up audience for bad stand-up and an incredible stand-up audience for good stand-up. And I am really a good audience for people who the audience might hate, but who are actually talented. Like they're interesting and know how to write a joke, but may not be funny to the audience. Like those are the people often who I'm like, yeah, this guy has my sensibility. And if he or she figures out how to translate it to the audience, they'll be successful.
Right. Did you watch Django's thing?
No, not yet. Not yet.
Oh, it's really, it's good. He's very, it's really funny.
This is Django Gold he's talking about, who was, I think, a writer for...
Maybe Colbert. Maybe and Colbert. Onion. Colbert is Onion, correct. Yeah.
Colbert is correct. No, he's really funny. Onion is correct. And he's, I've met him, and I've seen him do, like, clips and stuff. He is a very funny guy.
You know who I really like right now, mostly about his tweets about flying on airlines, is Tom Segura.
Oh, God. He's kidding. This is it. Tom Segura. Tom Segura has just been, like, exposing himself as the worst kind of, like, entitled asshole because someone...
Do you see that? Do you see that shit, Ron?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. That's how I found out Tom Segura was rich.
Yeah, I didn't know he has a rich daddy and all that shit. You know what I'm saying? He's got like his dad was like a VP at Merrill Lynch or something.
God, now I hate him.
I could tell from that tweet. I was like, oh, this guy was born rich. Cool.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know who else. Let's see who else do I like? Who else? Who else?
You're just trying to not talk about the Patriots. No, I see what's going on here.
Richie Torres's tweets about Israel. I like those.
Yeah. No, I'm just waiting for the Saints official account to tweet how they stand with Israel. Because it's super
why do they
relevant.
Feel the need to do that? Like I saw the Sixers did it and like the NBA in general did it.
The only one that made any sense to me is the Heat because they're owned by an Israeli guy. And I'm like, look, I don't particularly like that, but I get it. You know, like and then everyone else being, and some guy in Philly who writes for an indie paper in Philadelphia tweeted critically about the Sixers tweet. And, you know, said, I stand with Palestine. He got fired.
From a fucking Indian. It really is the post-9/11 moment right now, again, it feels like. Like, how do you get fired for that? And, you know, another guy who, you know, the Patriots and Robert Kraft, back to the topic, you know, Kraft obviously is like a big...
Israel guy, sure.
You know, Israel guy. And, you know, also, it always bums me out because, you know, I don't have heroes from sports guys, but Julian Edelman, if I had to choose one, is like my guy, you know, and he's like a big Israel guy too.
He shares my mom's maiden name is Edelman, so you gotta understand that I'm not surprised that Edelman's a big Israel guy.
Well, no, I mean, you know, I understand in a certain way, but then,
I'm not saying it approvingly. I'm just saying that I was probably kind of that guy until my 30s, where you don't think super critically about Israel as a state, and you just think of them as an extension of your own identity as like a Jewish person. And it's like, and it is sort of weird if you are a Jewish person around people who have grown up around, even if they're not Jewish, have grown up around a lot of Jewish people because we're pretty assimilated. But the ways in which we feel different, we kind of don't talk about a lot except as jokes. And so, you know, where you're just like, we're assimilated, but we also are like, Jesus fucking Christ, more carols, you know, like this isn't for me kind of feeling, which you just have a lot of. Yeah. And you just, you're like, well, whatever, I've been their fucking country, basically. So you just sort of accept it. Mm-hmm. But not that I particularly want our own country, but you know what I'm saying. But
so you're saying you hate Christmas carols?
I do. They're just like prayer to me. And so, when it turns to Israel, and I'm like, oh, great, I don't really have a home with other Jewish people either. Because there's some kind of fucked up party line about this fascist state, which is kind of like the crack version of the America cocaine, where it's like really distilled to its like really toxic essence, all of the ways in which we are kind of, you know, fascist and self-protective and cry bullies, Israel is like the epitome of all of that with our blessing. And so that's just sort of a shitty, fucked up part of my own identity. And this would have been like an episode I deleted from my mom's iPod when she was alive.
What's your deal, Ron? What's your religion? Anything?
I was Catholic, and then we went to, I guess you could call it, like, crazy church. The people who are rooting for Israel to start World War or whatever, you know, not really that, but they, you know, spoke in tongues and they were like holiness, you know, like all of that type of stuff. So like I had like a certain reverence for Israel because like, you know, they were supposed to be God's chosen people and like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then 9/11 happened. I started like, oh, wait, I should probably learn about all these religions. And then I like, you know, like, oh, yeah, man, a lot of this is bullshit. You know, people are people. And then you kind of just grow as an individual. I mean, I don't. What kind of gets me, though, is like this whole situation. I was thinking about this today, like the power. I can't help Palestine. It's nothing I can do. It's like illegal to like help. Like if I tried to throw a pack of aspirin over the fence, they would shoot me in the head to them. You know what I mean? Like I can't even do that. Right. But there's a million ways I could help Israel. But like all I can do is like root for Palestine on the internet. And then that just feels like consumption. That almost feels like the football game again. Yeah. And I'm just like it feels like Sunday when we was, so I'm like, I'm just, it turned me into like a consumer. And that's very, I don't know, it takes away my humanity. It makes me feel like an animal. Like, I'm just like, here's this junk. Now, you can just watch them tear it down with the bulldozer. You can't do shit about it. You can't help them. And, like, I went to the store to buy hummus, and it was all Sabra the other day. And I was like, shit, even if I buy hummus, I'm giving to Israel. Like, I can't even buy some non-shitty fucking Israeli hummus. There's nothing I can do to help Palestine. They don't have their own hummus brand. I can't even vote with my dollar. That's bullshit, but you can't, you know, like... So I think I've been like very frustrated like this last, I don't know what to, I just feel powerless, man. I don't know if y'all feel like that.
No, for sure. I think,
I don't know. It's frustrating.
I don't think any of us are under the assumption that tweets or anything are going to do anything. But then there's also the sense that like, well, if you don't say anything, is that weird too? You know what I mean?
I mean, that's sort of my position.
Yeah, exactly. I tweet too.
Yeah,
I'm tweeting. I find it
hard to tweet about because, I mean, my tone online is never sort of straight or strident. I find it shrill when I do it and boring when I do it. And so I have to find, like, someone else's voice worth pushing or some, like, dumb angle I can make a joke about. I mean, I really liked the Hell World column today was about that and about the kind, in a way, about the kind of helplessness of the discourse because you get boxed in because it's very hard to comment about the macro while the micro is atrocities. There's an empathy for the weak party having to fight a weak party's war, but the pictures are genuinely grotesque and it's hard to look at that and get mischaracterized as being approving of it rather than sort of having a sense of inevitability. And I don't know. It's like,
But there's also the sense that, and again, a lot of people are using this as just an excuse to, like, a lot of leftists are using it as an excuse to just, like, dunk on libs, you know? And that doesn't really do anything. Like, I'm so sick of that. Yeah. But at the same time, there's a lot of libs that think that this conflict started on Saturday.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's like, you know, this was the, you know, the Hamas was, you know, firing the first salvo in a war that just began. And, you know, obviously, we know that's not the case.
Yeah,
you know?
But I mean that, and it's like just an extension of how we treat our own history, you know.
Yeah.
Like not that I would argue that the United States deserved 9/11 or anything like that, but it is a historical.
Although you Mike just cut out. You just said the United States deserved
9/11. That is what I said. That is what I said. Okay.
That's what I heard.
But history didn't start on 9/11 either.
Right? No, for sure.
Like it's not that A led to B, but the picture's always more complex than that. It goes back a century, different countries fucking with each other in different ways. And there's like this pretense that if you talk about it with even the slightest bit of nuance that gives anyone credit for independent thought other than barbarism, that you've somehow conceded some kind of moral ground. Right. And it's just a dumb way of thinking about history and our place in it.
No, it's funny. There was like a thread on Blue Sky going, and shout out to Blue Sky, which is actually kind of cool, it turns out, I think. But we were talking about how the last time Bill Maher was cool was when he got, canceled for talking about 9/11.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he got fired for saying they weren't cowards. Right. Right. Like actually sacrificing your own life instead of dropping a missile and flying away is the opposite of cowardice. And he lost his show only to get a much worse show.
And it is that repeat of 9/11 thing, because like all the politicians come out and they call the attack cowardly and unprovoked, and it's like, no, that was not cowardly, and it was very provoked. Right. Like, this is the exact opposite of it. And then you even see the replay of 9/11 with people thinking Hamas is sneaking over the border in like Arizona and shit like that. Like, there's not sleeper cells in, like, Phoenix now or whatever. It feels like a bad repeat of that whole thing.
They are running the whole thing. And then, a lot of the Democrats are talking about, how marching and protesting in solidarity with Palestine is, they're trying to paint the Americans as terrorist sympathizers and shit like that already. Even your governor there, Charles. Yeah. The cool thing is, I think Eric Adams is still down in South America, so hopefully he's going to be sorting everything out with the border anytime soon.
Yeah, right? No, he has figured out a way to deputize the NYPD to raise Ramallah. And so,
Isn't
know.
Isn't there like an NYPD base in somewhere in Israel or something, or is that just like in... Spirit? No, I know they have a big one in the UK, I know that, spiritually the IDF and the NYPD are very much aligned, right?
Yeah, except that there are no Jews in the NYPD.
Can he say that?
I can, as long as they don't have my coordinates. All right, I'm gonna delete all of that. No, I'm not. I'm not gonna delete all of that. But
well, should we end it with a little bit more sports talk or what?
Who do you play? I guess we're gonna like whiplash back to it. So, what did you think of our aerial attack? No, I'm only kidding. I'm definitely gonna delete that.
No, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you the truth about this game. Like, most of my life, I would never miss a single snap of the Patriots, no matter what was going on. If I was at a wedding or funeral or something, I'd be paying attention to it. But like this year, the other day for this game, I was at the gym. I just kind of was looking up at the TV. I had the one headphone in, listening to the call. And then once it was like, once they were down like 14-0 in the first quarter or whatever it was, I was just like, well, fuck this. I'm not paying attention. So I don't really even know what happened. I know they brought in Bailey Zappi at one point.
Yeah, they did.
Sucked too.
They did. He was a clean. He was a clean 3-for-9.
Okay.
He improved on Mac Jones' rating. Mm-hmm. Mac Jones yards. Had a rating of 30.5, and Bailey Zappi's was 42.4.
See, both of those guys got ruined. Like, Zappi looked competent last year. He started two games, won two games. He looked like a big improvement over Jones when he came in when Mac was hurt. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the yanking him back and forth, I think, fucked with both of them. Like, I don't think Mac Jones is the guy or anything. I think he's a competent quarterback in the NFL. Maybe middle of the pack 20 out of 32 type of quarterback. Like, I think he can play the position of quarterback in the NFL, but something has gone wrong with this team in the past couple of years.
I will say,
it's just not right.
I would say the most troubling thing for you guys, to be serious, we've had trouble with our pass rush really getting pressure on anyone, and we only got two sacks on you guys and only four hits on top of that for only really getting in the quarterback's face six times. Mac Jones did a horrible job.
Yeah, he was sped up. He was sped up. He was thrown off his back foot. He was like,
but he wasn't That's what I mean. Like, I think it's sort of in his
head.
But in his head.
The clock
is way too fast, and he's just not going through progressions. He's not looking for open guys, and you know, like, we give people time to find the open guy.
No, but that's what I'm saying. I don't think he's dog shit. Like, he's just for some reason something happened, and he got like, you know how they always say, like, you can't mess with like a young quarterback's head, or it's just going to ruin him forever. I think something happened where, you know, if you gave him a decent line and a couple of wide receivers, which is the most insane thing, that they got rid of his favorite receiver, Jacoby Myers, and they replaced him with Juju Smith-Schuster, who fucking sucks apparently. And Jacoby Myers was like the latest in our, you know, sort of Troy Brown, Wes Welker, Julian Edelman type of, you know, the guy you go to when you have to get the third down, you know. And the Patriots have had that type of guy for 20 years. You know, it's like, you know, he's not too spectacular, but there has always been a dude that, all right, it's third and 11. This dude's going to go 12 yards down the field and catch the ball.
Jesus Christ. And Juju had three catches for 6 yards.
He might have 100 yards. He might have 100 yards on the season, if that, you know, something like that. So and that's, you know, and that's what I'm saying. Bill Belichick fucked with everything. He got rid of Mac Jones's favorite receiver, almost, who you might remember through that really ill-advised backwards lateral last year. It was like comically awful. And I don't know if that's why Bill got rid of him. But
I don't know.
Anyways, I'm probably not going to watch too intently the rest of the year. But
I was saying a couple of weeks ago that we may have just started like our blimp podcast before the Hindenburg, you know.
Why? Who do you got coming up next week?
No. Just after we lost two in a row and looked like shit. We have the Texans. Oh. We have the Texans and then the Jags and then the Colts. Yeah. So we have like a really soft schedule, which is why it was very frustrating that we honked away the Green Bay game by giving up, you know, 18 points. Or 17 points. I don't remember if we lost. Either way, we lost by 1 point.
It was 18 in the last 11 minutes.
18-17. Oh, wow. And then last week, we played a not very good Tampa team and got rinsed. Even though Tampa didn't even look very good, but we got blown out by a team that didn't look very good. And so we were really concerned about the future of this team. And now I feel like after beating the Patriots 34-0, we're Wile E. Coyote two steps off the cliff because we're like happy. But we just aren't looking down yet.
Well, I don't know. I hope it works out for you guys. And maybe I'll have to start becoming a Saints fan since I can't like the Patriots anymore.
All right. So let's do this. Let's
our fun team.
Let's talk about Hell World a little before we wrap up. Tell people what you do and where to find you.
Sure. So I write a newsletter called Welcome to Hell World, welcometohellworld.com. And I've got a new book out called The Creature Wanting Form. It's a collection of short stories. Oh, there it is. Thank you, sir. Charles is holding it up in the Zoom call right now. It's a great cover, by the way. If I don't say so myself,
the illustrations, the person who did the illustrations for this and for the Hell World books does real great work, like really cool stuff.
Thank you so much. Yeah, you know, I write about stuff like we were talking about earlier, but also bullshit and music And, you know, we have a good time, even though everything is fucking miserable, so.
Especially the music stuff, when you get the newsletter, is kind of a salve because the world is bleak and Hell World is a good mirror for that. And when you get people who really love music talking about the music they love, it's a balm, you know,
yeah, for the yeah, other we stuff. Just... We just did, been doing a series where people write about their top five songs, and we did R.E.M. and Elliott Smith and Weezer so far. Your last guest, Jeb, did a great write-up for the R.E.M. one, and a lot of familiar faces you probably know from the wider Charles podcasting universe, so...
Yeah, he never asked me to do those because he knows that I don't know five songs from any band.
Well, if you had to do one, who would it be?
If I had to?
If you, who's the band you're best equipped to write your top five?
I can't even off the top of my head answer the question because it's all butt rock shit from, you know, when I was young and I don't really listen to any of it anymore.
When I say you got to write about your top five songs, who would it be there, Ron?
Oh, I'm like... I am a passive music listener, oh, really? I guess you could say.
Okay.
I like certain songs, but I don't know much about... I mean, I grew up in the 90s. I liked a lot of rap music back then. But then, like, I got nothing. I got no content for this.
Yeah. If I were to choose anyone, it would actually probably be
Tribe. You guys are spending too much time thinking about the New Orleans Saints. We should be...
No, it would probably be Tribe. But even then, I don't know, like, all of their...
Who'd you say? Quest. Oh yeah, that well, that's a perfectly valid.
Yeah, but I would, but like okay. Even then, I'd be like, well, I don't know this album or that album or the one, you know, because I'm not like a completist, and I kind of got away from it, you know. I don't know.
Well, the thing about writing about music is the same as writing about sports. Is you just make it up and nobody, you just bullshit, you know.
I think Tupac's last album was really... That was probably my favorite album of all time, the Machiavelli album.
All right.
I still listen to that, like, all the time. Well, that's a really good one.
Well, when we do the Tupac one, I'll give you a call.
Okay, thanks, Luke. I'd be down with that. Yeah, right. That's one artist I know almost everything about.
All right, cool. There we go.
Who killed him? They just arrested a guy,
actually. Oh, they just arrested the dude.
Anyway, thank you so much.
All right, man.
To Luke for coming on the show. Welcome to hellworld.com. Please subscribe and get a paid subscription. Find his books at Or Books. Ron, thank you again, as always. All right, so thanks to Luke and Ron. This is City Saint and Country Saint. I'm Charles Starr. Thanks for listening.